gonna turn to gold? There's money to be made with workers overseas, where unions are not allowed and work protections are weak. And there's razor wire around the factories. Put your finger to a living child, turn it to gold. Put your finger to a living child, turn it to gold. Put your finger to a living child, turn it to gold.
The 7th Summit of the Americas will take place October 31st in Quito, Ecuador. The gathering of world leaders and trade representatives from 34 nations is designed to push for ratification of the Free Trade Area of the Americas, or FTAA, extending a NAFTA-like agreement among all nations in the Western Hemisphere, excluding Cuba. If enacted, it would be the most far-reaching free trade pact in history, affecting roughly 800 million people. Initiated in 1994, the FTAA will allow corporations to bypass democratically adopted environmental and worker protection laws, disproportionately affecting women and people of color, say critics of the proposal. On October 7th, a coalition of groups promoting fair trade came to Santa Cruz, California, to participate in a public hearing on the effects of the FTAA. Tonight we'll hear from Santa Cruz County Supervisor Jeff Almquist addressing the threat of privatization of water in Santa Cruz County. We'll hear from Erlinda Lucia Matos Hernandez, a displaced union activist and university professor from Colombia who escaped death after an attack on her life, and Fela Contreras, a former factory worker from Mexico, who along with a group of workers filed the first complaints under the NAFTA side agreements. We begin the presentation with Lisa Hoyos of the California Fair Trade Campaign. She gives us an overview of the FTAA and its potential impacts.
One thing that many grassroots groups at the county level, state level, are concerned about is how it puts the GATS, the General Agreement on Trade and Services type agreements, what many of you will also recall it was in the Multilateral Agreement on Investment that activists killed, it interjects all that into the FTAA. So at the level of our own efforts to pass progressive legislation at the county level with living wage laws, progressive procurement policies around environmental things like contracting to vendors who provide recycled paper and do, you know, those kinds of things, those kinds of progressive initiatives Santa Cruz is really actually quite known for around the country, we wouldn't be able to do anymore. It would be a violation of FTAA rules. And same with WTO. Just in the way of background, the FTAA was launched in December of 1994 at the Summit of the Americas in Miami. And little progress, however, was made until about 1998 when something called the Trade Negotiations Committee was formed. And this body consists of the 34 vice ministers of trade in the 34 countries where this is being negotiated. And there's 9 working groups. And these working groups are always negotiating. And so they're looking into such issues like services, which I've touched upon, investment, government procurement, market access questions, agriculture, intellectual property rights, which you know as TRIPS, trade-related intellectual property, and subsidies and anti-dumping, competition policy, and dispute settlement. I want to touch on dispute settlement just for a second because that's the sort of wholly anti-democratic mechanism which is being formulated. It's sort of like the shadow government, or maybe not shadow, the new global governance structure where unaccountable to anyone, trade bureaucrats are taking key decisions about our livelihoods, our well-being, our ability to pass laws in our backyards. California had a gasoline additive, we still have it, called MTBE that was supposed to be in cleaner gasoline. And MTBE was found leaking into our groundwater. And it's a carcinogen. So grassroots folks rose up a lot in South Lake Tahoe, a lot in Santa Monica. We wanted to, of course, logically ban MTBE in the gasoline because it was polluting our groundwater. And Methanex, a Canadian company that is producing one portion of the chemical compound that's involved in part of MTBE, the chemical, they sued the U.S. government to try to pressure California to rescind its law. or to really try to get payment of close to $1 billion for their lost potential profits. This kind of takings law, remember Newt Gingrich and all that, takings law sort of mentality, that's right now in NAFTA. It's called Chapter 11, and it's going to be expanded to 34 countries. So it means any Yahoo multinational can sue governments for public health laws, laws in the public interest, and it's really, really heinous and dangerous. Right now within the WTO, like let's say a French multinational, Lyonnaise Water Company or something, they would have to petition the French government to then have a dispute settlement issue put within the context of the WTO. So a government would challenge a government. But in this case, any multinational can challenge a government, which is really, really scary precedent. It's already in place in 3 countries, and now it's about to be in place in 34. And then who decides? Again, unaccountable board of trade bureaucrats, not like a public court process that has any participatory mechanisms in that, even the ability to protest. It's like people who come together, and it's really hard to access. And I think everyone see that bumper sticker called Think Globally, Act Locally? Sort of at the base of all this is taking away, kind of shackling our ability to act locally to influence global policy and local policy. This is technical, but there's one more sort of point by way of framework thinking I want to put out there. I think it's clearly by design that all these trade accords happen in Geneva. They happen with trade ministers who are just part of government administration. So under the Bush administration, it's Robert Zoellick, a trade hawk, if you will, making these kinds of decisions and leading these kinds of processes, selecting the negotiators that work on these 9 working groups. So our ability, again, is being ratcheted up to these levels that it's harder and harder to influence. So it's by design, but this is when they developed these 9 working groups. These were the kinds of neoliberal policies they were trying to put into effect. They're the following: economic integration of the hemisphere, promotion of the integration of capital markets. We all saw what happened to the East Asian tigers with the quick capital flows, and then one day people think that it's a scary investment to have a lot of stocks in Malaysian companies as they all pull out at once, and then their currency collapses and people are poor. Remember that back in 97, 98? So like I was saying, these negotiating committees, parallel negotiating committees inside the WTO, elimination of barriers and non-tariff barriers to trade. It means job loss in the states where we can't protect certain industries, but also in the developing countries where they have very, very few areas in which they're competitive. Commodities, mining, but maybe agriculture. So when the U.S. protects its agricultural market, it's a long discussion, but we typically, and so does the EU, do it very unfairly, where we're pressuring developing countries to open up their markets so we can flood their markets with products, but because we're the biggest, you know, we're the 800-pound gorilla, we can keep their stuff out. So it's like unfair terms of trade in products. Under NAFTA, in the last 7 years, we've lost 765,000 jobs as a result of NAFTA, and there's been many, many studies conducted by Economic Policy Institute, the AFL-CIO, and other independent sort of research university-tied groups that have come up with that number. In Mexico, manufacturing wages fell from 21%, by 21% between 95 and 99. And as Fela will discuss more deeply, there's grave harm to the environment, as many of you also know, in the Maquiladora region, because companies leave here to go where the regulatory environment is less stringent. And it's ugly. The impact on privatization of basic services, it's hard to say this. Like, on some level, we need to fight a ground war at the grassroots. But it's also important that we know the lexicon they engage in, because when we go lobby our Congress members, for example, they say, well, what kinds of concerns do you have? And you explain the concerns, but they typically like to sort of technical you down, in a way, technical speak you down. And so I just want to name some of these things that are concepts that if we know and understand, it just helps us engage where they engage. And more, we'll always engage more deeply, politically, socially, etc. But it's important to know some of the terms of art, as they call them, so when they throw them out, you know what they're talking about. So one is called national treatment. And under this rule, countries are required to treat foreign corporations just as they do domestic. So what that means concretely, let's say LA County, they have a municipal water district. If a foreign competitor is applying for your water contract, you can't preference LA Municipal Water District over Vivendi, a huge multinational foreign corporation. Domestic regulation, this one's really quite scary. It would mean that provisions on domestic regulation require countries limit their regulations to, and this is like a really important quote to remember, we can only regulate to this extent, not more burdensome than necessary to ensure the quality of service. not more burdensome than necessary. But the problem is always who decides, who's making a decision about what's more burdensome than necessary. We know in the U.S. context, California has some of the most protective environmental standards. Why is that? Because we won them in the streets and grassroots fighting and the Sierra Club legal, you know, lawsuits, et cetera, et cetera. So we know that those would certainly be ratcheted down under FTAA and WTO. I said I'd touch upon this committee. It's called the California Senate Select Committee on International Trade Policy and State Legislation. It was started by Tom Hayden several years ago. Sheila Kuehl took it over, a progressive state legislator from LA. And what it's doing, it's looking at all the California laws that have been passed and which ones would be undermined by international trade rules to try to build consciousness at that level and to do it with the prestige, if you will, of a select committee in the Senate. So let's go to the national level. Country-based campaigns are really critically important. So as we fight services fight, like the water fight that you're going to hear about later, there's groups like in Bolivia, groups in South Africa doing the same kinds of fights. And in terms of global leverage against huge, huge institutions like the WTO, it's important that we link with each other on these fights. And then in closing, we know we lost Fast Track a few months ago. In August 6th, they signed it, Hiroshima Day. President Bush signed the Fast Track legislation, which takes away Congress's ability to amend trade agreements. They can only vote them up or down. So I know what's going to happen unless we fight hard, hard, hard. We're going to go see Congress people, and they're going to go, I feel your pain on this particular issue about the ability to privatize water. However, I will look like an economic, what's that word? I can't remember it. Neanderthal Luddite, that was the word I was looking for, if I don't pass it, and so I'm really sorry. And so for the next 5 to 7 years, until we can try to get it undone, we're going to still have to get Congress to be our voices on some level, because they are the body in our nation which links up to the USTR. So we have to find out what can Congress still do, and then smack them till they do it, or fight them till they do it, or meet with them until they do it. But for example, there's really no oversight right now around trade agreements. We have to get them to get drafts of the text, like the ones that are being negotiated next month in Quito on the FTAA. We have to demand drafts, do hearings around drafts. We're thinking of trying to get Congress members to serve on sort of oversight committees that we form with local elected officials, trade union leaders, other civil society leaders. So ideas like that, we're sort of making the road as we go, but it's important that we think of engaging Congress when they sort of contracted out their responsibility, those who voted yes on Fast Track, to protect our public interests. So we have to think of those strategies, and that's part of the ongoing organizing discussion. Thank you very much. Adelante.
Next, we hear from Bella Contreras, a former factory worker from Mexico who, along with a group of workers, filed the first complaints under the NAFTA side agreements.
Yo vengo de Nuevo Laredo, Tamaulipas. Okay. I'm from Nuevo Laredo, Tamaulipas in Mexico.
Es una frontera donde hay muchas maquiladoras.
It's a border area where there are a lot of factories.
Yo soy una ex trabajadora, yo trabajé por 13 años.
I'm an ex factory worker, I worked for 13 years.
En la maquiladora Sony Magnéticos de México.
In the Sony Magnetics factory in Mexico.
En 1994. Quisimos hacer un sindicato independiente.
We wanted to form an independent union.
Porque nosotros queríamos cambiar de legados sindicales. Nosotros queríamos cambiar.
We wanted to change our union reps.
Porque los que teníamos no nos ayudaban en nada.
Because the ones that we had didn't help us in anything.
Nos organizamos, hicimos nuestras elecciones.
We organized and we had our elections.
Pero ahí en esas elecciones había representantes del sindicato oficial de México.
But in those elections there were representatives from the official union of Mexico,
que es la CTM,
which is the CTM.
Y nos dijeron que habíamos perdido.
And they told us we had lost.
Nos dio coraje.
We were angry.
Hicimos una protesta.
We made a protest.
Salimos a la calle, dejamos las áreas de trabajo.
We left our work areas and we went out into the street.
Salimos por las calles, la mayoría éramos mujeres.
We went out into the street, most of us were women.
Protestando porque queríamos que nos respetaran nuestros derechos.
We went out to protest because we wanted them to respect our rights.
Buscamos ayuda en nuestras autoridades.
We looked for help from the local authorities.
Pero nadie nos escuchó.
But no one was listening to us.
Ya con bastante coraje, porque traíamos mucho coraje.
So we were very angry. We were very angry.
Nos paramos en una vía donde era pasaba la exportación hacia para acá Estados Unidos.
We put ourselves out into the street to stop the export traffic that was headed for the United States.
Y en menos que como decimos nosotros que canta un gallo, salió el presidente municipal.
And in the wink of an eye, the president, the local mayor showed up.
Y nos decía, quítense muchachas, no hagan eso, están parando la exportación, está perdiendo mucho dinero.
And he said, girls, please, get out of the way. You're blocking the road and we're losing a lot of money.
Ahora lo que queríamos era que nos ayudara y nos respetara nuestro derecho.
No lo hizo. We said we want you to help us and respect our rights, but he didn't do it.
Seguimos protestando y nos fuimos a la planta principal de la Sony.
We kept on protesting. We went to the main Sony plant.
Ahí nos paramos en las puertas y no dejamos ni dejamos entrar ni salir a trabajadores.
We posted ourselves out there in front of the doors and we wouldn't permit any workers to go in or go out.
Nosotros lo que queríamos era que nos respetaran nuestras elecciones.
We just wanted them to respect our elections.
El presidente municipal se enojó y mandó traer los bomberos.
The president of the municipality, the mayor, became very angry and he sent the fire department out.
Y nos bañó, nos echó agua. And pero ahí nos quedamos.
They hosed us down.
Ahí nos quedamos.
But we stayed there.
Como no pudieron con nosotros, la empresa y autoridades por atrás dejaron entrar a la policía.
Since they didn't know how to deal with us, so the factory itself and the authorities let the police come in from behind through the back door.
La policía nos golpeó.
The police beat us.
Nos golpeó.
And they beat us.
Así golpeadas, ahí nos quedamos, ¿no? Si somos bien.
Okay, you want to beat us?
Somos muy enojonas nosotros.
We're
ahí
staying.
Nos quedamos.
We're pissed off and we
seguíamos, are seguíamos protestando y seguíamos exigiendo que nos cumpliera nuestro derecho.
We stay there protesting and demanding that they fulfill our rights.
Al cuarto día, porque duramos cuatro noches con sus cuatro días ahí.
On the fourth day, because we were there 4 days and nights.
Por órdenes del gobernador del estado.
But because of the governor's orders.
Mandó policías.
They sent the police.
Con sus armas de alto poder.
With their high-powered weapons.
Y puras mujeres, nos dijo. O se quitan o las mato.
And they said to us, and
pues ahí sí nos fuimos, ¿verdad?
We were all women. They said, get out of here or we'll kill you. So we left.
A raíz de ese movimiento, fuimos despedidas más de 120 trabajadoras
por el
movimiento.
Because of that movement, more than 120 of my companions and I were fired.
En 1994 se había firmado, de acuerdo, un tratado de libre comercio.
In 1994, they signed the NAFTA trade agreement.
Estaba México, Estados Unidos y Canadá.
It was between Mexico, the United States, and Canada.
En ese tratado se decía que nos iban a respetar nuestros derechos.
In that treaty, they said they were going to respect our rights.
Que podíamos hacer sindicato.
That we could form a union.
Que no nos iban a violar ningún derecho sobre la ley federal. Lo hicieron.
That they weren't going to violate any of our federal labor laws, but they did.
En 1996 nosotros pusimos una queja ante la NAO.
In 1996 we presented a formal complaint with the NAO.
Ahí fue con ayuda de Coalición Pro Justicia en las Maquiladoras.
That was with the help of the Coalition for Justice in the Maquiladoras.
Esta es una organización trinacional.
That's a trinational organization.
Tiene oficinas en México, Estados Unidos y Canadá.
They have offices in Mexico, the United States, and Canada.
En México hay una oficina de la NAO.
In Mexico, there's an office of the NAO.
México y se comunicó a Washington, donde nosotros pusimos nuestra queja.
From Mexico, they communicated to the office in Washington when we presented our formal complaint.
Tuvimos un juicio ante una corte en San Antonio, Texas.
We had a hearing in front of a court in San Antonio, Texas.
Dijeron que habíamos ganado, pero ahí no castigan a nadie.
They told us that we won, but they don't punish anyone.
Esa nada más es una oficina que ahí dejan como el Tratado de Libre Comercio. Firmas y Ahí te la dejo. Una queja la ponen ahí, ni ganas, ni pierdes, ni le cobran dinero a la que violó tus derechos, nada.
It's an office where it's like,
o sea, es otro tratado de libre comercio.
You just sign it, and maybe you can make a complaint. You sign, you say something, but nothing happens at all. It's the same. That's what's happened with NAFTA.
En 1996 es cuando nace Centro de Trabajadores y Comunidades.
In 1996 is when we formed the Center for Workers and Their Communities.
Nosotros lo que hacemos en Centro de Trabajadores y Comunidades es
what we do in the Center for Workers and Their Communities is
es que esta es la culminación del movimiento sindical y tratado de libre comercio, los dos al mismo tiempo.
We're dealing with both the union movement and the free trade agreement at the same time.
Uh-huh. Puesto que este tratado es un tratado desigual.
Because that trade agreement is an agreement that creates inequality.
Es solo un hecho a las grandes potencias mundiales.
Money?
A las potencias, a las gigantes, a las...
It's a fact that's created by the large national powers.
Como en este caso, Canadá y Estados Unidos.
Like in this case, Canada and the United States.
Porque nosotros en la frontera...
Because those of us on the border,
estamos peor que antes de que empezara el Tratado de Libre Comercio.
We're worse off than before NAFTA started.
Hay mucha emigración del sur del país.
There's a lot of migration from the southern part of the country.
Como de Oaxaca, Chiapas, Veracruz.
Like from Oaxaca,
San Luis Potosí.
Chiapas, Veracruz, San Luis Potosí.
Porque cuando se firmó el Tratado de Comercio decían que nos iban a pagar en dólares.
Because when they signed the free trade agreement, they told us they were going to pay us in dollars.
Y por hora.
And by the hour.
Pero qué mentira.
But it was a lie.
Ni nos pagaban por hora ni nos pagaban en dólares.
They don't pay us by the hour and they don't pay us in dollars.
$40 a la semana es lo que nos pagan en las maquiladoras.
They pay $40 a week. That's what they pay in the factories.
¿Qué es lo que pasa con toda la inmigración que viene del interior de la República?
And so what happens with all that internal migration that's coming from within Mexico?
Con el sueldo que le pagan no puede pagar una renta.
With the money that they earn, they can't even afford to pay rent.
O como o pago renta.
Either I eat or I pay rent.
Lo que hago es expropio un terreno ejidal.
So what
y
they,
ahí me meto.
So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to appropriate some of this ejido common land, and that's where I'm going to live.
Ahí están en las comunidades esas tienen los obreros, compañeros de nosotros, sus casas hechas de cartón, de tarimas.
In those communities where the workers are living, our companions at work, they build their houses out of carton or out of straw mats.
Donde no tienen ni siquiera el servicio más básico que el agua potable.
They don't have any kind of public utilities, not even drinking water.
Tienen que comprarla.
They have to buy it.
Y muchas veces está contaminada.
And often it's already polluted.
Entonces, ¿qué es lo que hacemos nosotros, Centro de Trabajadores y Comunidades?
So what do we do for among these workers and their communities?
Nosotros los enseñamos sus derechos.
We teach them their rights.
¿Para qué?
Why?
Con el tiempo ellos logren que les paguen sueldos justos.
Because over time they will achieve reasonable and fair salaries.
Que sus familias puedan comer todos los días.
So that their children and families can eat every day.
Entonces yo aquí estoy porque yo en mi comunidad lo que a mí me importa mucho es la gente trabajadora como yo, porque el Tratado de Libre Comercio nomás nos dejó el río contaminado.
I'm here because the community, my community, workers like me, is very important to me, and what NAFTA has left us is a contaminated river.
El ambiente está contaminado también.
A polluted environment.
Sueldos muy bajos, maquiladoras que han cerrado.
Very low wages and factories that have closed.
Mucho desempleo.
A lot of unemployment.
Porque ellas se van donde la mano de obra es más barata.
Because they go where manual labor is the cheapest.
Entonces, ¿qué es lo que pasa con esos tratados?
So what is it that really happens with these agreements?
¿Quiénes son los que se llenan los bolsillos de dinero?
Who are the ones who are filling their pockets with money?
Porque el obrero sigue siendo pobre.
Because the workers, they're still poor.
Pero el empresario.
But the factory owner.
Entonces, ¿qué es lo que hay que hacer aquí?
So what
Yo creo que aquí es unirnos.
So what are we going to do? We're going to unite.
Trabajadores de todo el mundo.
All the workers of the world.
Donde todos seamos una misma persona.
So we're like one
no porque
person.
Ella sea blanca y yo sea morena vamos a ser diferentes.
Not because,
somos iguales.
Not because I'm dark skinned or we speak a different language. We're
Lograr
all the
un
same.
Mundo mejor.
We're gonna reach, achieve a better world.
Quizás a lo mejor yo no lo veo.
Maybe I won't see it.
Quizás yo no lo vea mis nietos y digan.
Maybe I won't see it, but my grandchildren.
Discúlpenme.
Excuse me.
Y digan esa señora que andaba ahí era mi abuela.
And my grandchildren will
Andaba
say,
luchando por una gente trabajadora, that, igual que ella.
That woman was my grandmother.
Porque
she
nuestras
for all
autoridades
these
no nunca hace nada por uno. Entonces yo creo que ya basta.
Because the ya authorities basta. Never looked out for anyone, and she
ya
said,
basta.
"That's enough."
Ya estamos cansadas.
We're tired.
De que siempre nos digan lo que tengamos que hacer.
That they always tell us what we need to do.
Yo creo que somos suficientemente responsables para decidir y qué es lo que voy a hacer con mi vida.
And now we are sufficiently responsible to decide for ourselves, for myself, what we're going to do
Gracias.
With our lives.
Gracias.
Thank you.
And now, Erlinda Lucia Matos Hernandez, a displaced union activist and university professor from Colombia who escaped death after an attack on her life. Her trip in the United States is being sponsored by the AFL-CIO. She discusses her fears around the extension of the NAFTA model to Colombia.
Me encuentro en este país en calidad de refugiada política.
I'm here as a political refugee.
Por un año.
For a year.
Pienso que la violencia que vive en este momento Colombia, que en este momento está colocando más muertos que los países que legalmente están en guerra.
I believe that the violence in Colombia now, that Colombia is a country in which there is more death going on now than in all the countries that are at war.
En este momento Colombia es la nueva Vietnam.
Right now Colombia is the new Vietnam.
Pensamos como líderes sindicales colombianos refugiados en este país.
We as union leaders who are refugees in this country, we think
que la violencia que vive el mundo y todo ese dinero que se va en armas no es más que una guerra de poder económico.
That all the violence that's going on in the world and all the armed uprisings is nothing more than economic war.
Colombia es el ejemplo más claro de esta política.
And Colombia is the clearest example of that policy.
Cuando se habla de Colombia, para las personas se le viene a la mente y se le ha vendido la imagen a través de los medios de comunicación.
When people talk about Colombia, they think about the images that are created by the media.
Que el problema de Colombia es el narcotráfico y la guerrilla.
And they think that the problem of Colombia is drug trafficking and the guerrilla movement.
Nosotros como movimiento sindical y como víctima del conflicto que vive Colombia,
but we as union movement leaders and victims of the Colombian violence,
podemos decir hoy que el problema de Colombia no es el narcotráfico ni la guerrilla.
Can say that the problem in Colombia is not the drug trafficking nor the guerrillas.
No es el problema de la guerrilla porque la guerrilla se puede acabar igual que pasó con El Salvador y la miseria y el hambre y toda la discriminación con la clase trabajadora continúa.
It's not a problem of the guerrillas because as happened in El Salvador, the guerrilla movement can disappear, but it's the misery and the hunger that goes on day in and day out that's the problem.
Otro pueblo ejemplo es Argentina, que no tiene guerrilla y sin embargo la economía la rompieron los grandes monopolios económicos.
Another example is Argentina, that does not have a guerrilla movement, but nonetheless its economy was destroyed by the large transnational companies.
Creemos que por el contrario la guerrilla justifica el armamento que va a través del Plan Colombia.
¿Quién justifica?
Justifica.
¿Quién?
Al gobierno de Bush.
The government of Bush is justifying the arms that are flowing into Colombia under the auspices of the Plan Colombia.
El Plan Colombia va dirigido en armas porque detrás de todo eso se quiere fortalecer al paramilitarismo en Colombia para defender las grandes multinacionales.
The Plan Colombia is a plan to bring arms into Colombia to strengthen the paramilitaries who are defending the transnational corporations there.
Hoy es tan evidente que hasta los periódicos oficiales ya no pueden tapar la realidad. El New York Times, Los Angeles Times, el Washington Times ha publicado en los últimos tiempos y Human Rights Watch artículos donde están mirando y diciendo abiertamente que donde están operando las grandes multinacionales, donde más presencia paramilitar existe en la zona.
It's completely evident. Even in the newspapers can't cover it up anymore. The New York Times, the LA Times, the Washington Times have published articles. Human Rights Watch has published an article, and they can see and are stating openly that where the largest paramilitary operations are occurring, that's where the transnationals have their plants.
O si no, ¿cómo se justifica que hayan atacado abiertamente a todos los líderes sindicales?
They have openly attacked all the union leaders.
Hoy en Colombia, ser sindicalista es la profesión más peligrosa del mundo.
Nowadays in Colombia, to be a union activist is the most dangerous profession there is.
En la universidad donde yo trabajaba, fueron asesinados 10 profesores en un año.
In the university where I worked, 10 professors were killed in one year.
Yo fui víctima de un atentado y me tocó desplazarme hace un año a la ciudad de Bogotá.
And I was also a victim of an attack and had to displace myself a year ago and move to Bogotá.
Los grandes números de asesinatos que se registraron en esa universidad se debió a que los profesores que hacíamos parte del sindicato denunciamos corrupción de personas que hoy son senadores de las repúblicas.
The largest number of assassinations was due to the fact that we professors were part of a union movement and we denounced the corruption among the congresspeople.
Sin embargo, nosotros como clase trabajadora tenemos que estar como si fuéramos algunos delincuentes refugiándonos, desplazándonos internamente.
Even so, what's happening is we of the working class have to act as if we're some sort of criminals. We're being displaced and having to be relocated internally.
En septiembre del año pasado, cuando me desplacé a Bogotá, en el mes de diciembre apareció un graffiti frente al hotel, un hotel barato porque no teníamos para pagar, y dejé a mis hijos abandonados en la ciudad de Barranquilla, en la costa. Y no teníamos con qué pagar el hotel, sin embargo los paramilitares ubicaron a varios compañeros sobrevivientes de los atentados y colocaron un graffiti.
And last year, in September, when I had to move to Bogotá, we were living in a cheap hotel because we couldn't afford anything more, and some graffiti appeared there. I had left my kids in Barranquilla, and we had moved to this hotel, but nonetheless, the paramilitaries were able to locate the people who had survived, and they marked the hotel with graffiti.
El graffiti decía, Bogotá es muy grande, tiene muchos hoteles para que se hospeden y muchos cementerios para que se queden.
And the graffiti said, Bogotá is a big city. There's a lot of places where you can stay and a lot of cemeteries where you can stay.
Sin embargo, nosotros también hemos sido unos sindicalistas porque tenemos una conciencia política de la realidad que viven nuestros pueblos y organicé el comité de maestros desplazados para exigirle al gobierno en medio de toda la violencia y toda la persecución. Organicé el comité de maestros desplazados de Colombia.
Nonetheless, we union activists have a strong political consciousness and we understand the realities of our people. So I was able to organize the displaced teachers committee in order to talk to present our demands to the government.
Posteriormente, pues, era tan evidente la masacre que el gobierno de Estados Unidos, como ya estaban haciendo campaña al hoy paramilitar presidente nuestro de Colombia, sacó un programa para exiliarnos temporalmente solamente con una visa por un año en este país, del cual llevo 6 meses.
Later, it was evident because of the massacre, the U.S. government was supporting the paramilitaries, but they created a program by which we could seek refuge. We could get a visa to seek refuge for a year and in the United States, and I've been here for 6 months on that.
En relación al narcotráfico, yo creo que quedó claro esto de que el problema de Colombia no es la guerrilla. Quedó claro también que, por ejemplo, hay una multinacional como Coca-Cola que en Guatemala y en Colombia ha asesinado también prácticamente a todo su sindicato, porque los trabajadores denunciaban que a la multinacional Coca-Cola se le vendía el agua más barata que la de consumo de la población.
Concerning the drug trafficking, it's clear that the problem is not the guerrillas. For example, the Coca-Cola company in Guatemala and in Colombia has killed almost all of its unionized people because the union workers who worked at the transnational company Coca-Cola were revealing the fact that they were buying water at a much cheaper price than the population could buy it.
En relación al narcotráfico, tenemos que decir que la apertura económica o el ALCA o el libre comercio que se impuso desde el año 94 en Colombia trajo como consecuencia que se fortalecieran más los cultivos de coca.
Concerning drug trafficking, the free trade agreement, like the FTAA agreement that was imposed in 1994 in Colombia, has actually led to a strengthening and increase in coca cultivation.
Porque los campesinos sembraban cultivos lícitos, o sea, cultivos legales, y le importaban los mismos productos que sembraba, se los importaban más económico. Lo único que le compraban era la coca y tuvieron que sembrar coca.
Because the farmers were growing legal crops and those things started being imported at a cheaper price, and the only thing that they could really grow in order to make a living was the coca.
Por eso creemos que si se quiere erradicar el narcotráfico, se tendría que plantearle una política agraria al campesino.
We believe that in order to eradicate the problem of drug trafficking, you're going to have to start a plan for an agrarian reform.
Y no la guerra química que en este momento tiene a más de el cuarto de la población de Colombia desplazada, porque es una guerra química indiscriminada contra una población.
And not the chemical warfare, which right now has a quarter of the Colombian population displaced because of the indiscriminate use of chemical warfare.
Por eso hoy decimos que cuando se dice, Bush dice que se está declarando una guerra contra contra el terrorismo, nosotros decimos el terrorismo como tal no existe. Las guerras siempre van dirigidas a personas.
So, and when Bush says he's starting a war against terrorism, we say terrorism is not an entity that exists. It's always a war that's directed against people.
Creemos que si de verdad hay una intención de paz o de ayuda a Colombia, no debe ir en armas ni debe ir en ayuda militar.
We believe that if there's really an intention to create peace, it shouldn't be done using arms and military power.
Está comprobado que hay presencia de militares en Colombia egresados de las escuelas de las Américas.
It's been proven that there's the presence of military personnel in Colombia that have graduated from the School of the Americas.
Como Ritualejo del Río, podemos decirlos hasta con nombres, y personas que estuvieron respaldando al actual presidente de hoy.
As for example, Ritualejo del Río, we can name names, and they are backing up the current president.
Colombia hoy ocupa el primer puesto en violación de derechos humanos ante todos los organismos internacionales.
Colombia now holds the first place in human rights violations among all the organizations.
Nosotros queremos hacer un llamado a que la lucha, como decía la compañera, una lucha justa, digna, de la clase trabajadora trascienda fronteras.
we're calling for a struggle, as my compañera Fela said, for a struggle that, for justice and dignity that crosses all borders.
No se trata solamente de solidaridad. Se trata de que el pueblo norteamericano, hoy que nosotros estamos aquí, que desconocíamos también cuáles son las políticas que vive el pueblo norteamericano, también vemos que sufre sometido al modelo de ley 100 de privatización de la salud. Se pasó de ser paciente a ser cliente.
We're not just talking about solidarity here. Even the people in the United States, people we didn't know before, we can see that they are also suffering from the same thing. For example, the laws that have privatized health care. People who were once patients are now only clients.
Esta guerra también es del pueblo norteamericano.
This is also a struggle for the North American people.
Esta mañana tuvimos la experiencia de visitar a los compañeros de la huelga de los trabajadores de los puertos, y vimos también que lo están amenazando con la militarización del puerto.
This morning we visited with at the dock workers strike, and we see that they're also being threatened with militarization in the port.
Esta guerra de los monopolios internacionales por defender sus riquezas no tienen que ver con nadie. No respetan ningún país, ninguna potencia ni nada, porque para ellos lo que les interesa realmente es crecer y obedecer a todo lo que implica las políticas del Fondo Monetario Internacional.
The transnationals don't respect anybody. The only thing that they really want to do is fulfill the demands of the IMF.
Muchas gracias por su solidaridad y por su atención. Me place de que haya gente joven, porque nosotros, que no por vocación suicida, porque estamos amenazados, seguimos poniendo la cara, y yo les digo sinceramente que a pesar de todo, ni siquiera me voy a quedar aquí. De pronto me maten, porque es lo más seguro, pero sí, suena muy frío decirlo, pero de todos modos, creo que también parte de la violencia es sacar a los líderes de sus tierras, refugiarlos en otro para debilitar los movimientos, y nosotros no lo vamos a permitir. Nosotros seguimos sembrando a la gente, educándola políticamente para que continúen la lucha. Esperamos que quede Lula en el Brasil, se fortalezca Chávez en Venezuela, y yo creo que otra América es posible. Gracias.
Thank you very much. I see there are many young people here. My vocation is not suicide. You know, I'm showing my face. I'm not going to stay here. They may kill me. I know it's cold to say this, but part of how they take us out, part of the violence is getting us out of our countries and not permitting us to be there. We're going to stay there. We're going to keep planting the seeds of the struggle. I hope Lula wins in Brazil, and thank you very much.
And finally, Santa Cruz County Supervisor Jeff Almquist addressing the threat of privatization of water in Santa Cruz County and abroad.
On the Board of Supervisors, we think of ourselves as having a very local role. And in fact, when we try to do anything that has implications beyond the local level, like adopting a resolution supporting a good congressional resolution on war in Iraq, the main argument against it is that we shouldn't do that kind of thing. It's not within our purview. We don't get involved in too many national issues. I don't think we got involved in any debate in any way about NAFTA when it was being considered in Congress. And this situation has presented itself in my jurisdiction, in my area up in the San Lorenzo Valley, that kind of gives the county an opportunity to really weigh in on this issue and to also educate people about the really bad parts of NAFTA from an environmental standpoint. And I'll get to how NAFTA plays in here, because this is really about privatization of water resources. Up in Felton, for many years, the water was provided by a little utility company called Citizens Utilities. Back in the 60s, they provided water all over the San Lorenzo Valley. In the early 70s, the San Lorenzo Valley Water District, which is a county water district, was formed and bought many of their assets in Ben Lomond and Boulder Creek, and they now provide most of the water in those parts of the San Lorenzo Valley, and also in parts of Scotts Valley. However, in this town of Felton, the water continued to be provided by Citizens, which has about 1,200 connections. It gets its water out of the Fall Creek area, quite close to my house. I'm a Citizens user. The water's really quite delicious. It's a very local little operation. Citizens was sort of an agglomeration of little utility properties around the state. So it had the operation in Felton. It provided water in the Monterra area up in north of Half Moon Bay. provided water to the city of Thousand Oaks and to the city of San Diego. So obviously we're the little tiny tail on a great big dog, sort of. A couple of years ago, discussions were had where the Citizens was purchased by Cal American Water. Cal American provided water down in the Carmel Valley and in the Monterey Peninsula and other parts of the state. Cal America is now a division of American Water Works, which is one of the largest water purveyors in the United States. What's happening right now is that there's an application pending before the Public Utilities Commission to approve an acquisition of Cal American's assets in California by a company called Apollo Acquisitions, which is an American corporation, which is wholly owned by Thames Water Holding, which is wholly owned by Thames Water PLC, a British company, which is wholly owned by a company called RWE Aktien Gesellschaft, which is one of the largest utility companies in the world. This was sort of brewing along. We didn't get very good notice of it, but it was brewing along through this last year. And I'd get occasional calls from people in Felton, do you know about this French company that's buying our water? Is there anything bad going on? And it didn't really get up too high on the radar until a couple of weeks ago. They also announced they wanted a 56% rate increase, which gets everybody really steamed up, obviously. A little background on the German company is interesting. This was originally a collection of German utility companies providing electrical utilities, little municipal companies, that grew through the early 1900s and became the company that powered the Third Reich in Germany during the war. They built the first integrated utility system in Europe, which was used to take the power from France and the Netherlands and Belgium back to the Ruhr Valley to make steel during the war in the countries that they'd conquered. They're also one of the world's largest processors of nuclear waste. They're one of the world's largest garbage haulers. They're one of the world's largest strip mining companies. Thames Water was the company that first brought public water to the city of London back in the 1500s. Britain privatized a lot of their public industries back in the 1980s, and in 1989, this company became private. In the 6 years that followed, they raised the rates by 50%. Then finally, after having raised the rates, they cut their investment in their infrastructure by about $450 million and turned all that money over to their shareholders as dividends. And that's a fairly typical pattern of practice for large multinational corporations, and it's really an essential feature of them that's basically incorporated into NAFTA, which is the idea that the only standard that matters is the commercially reasonable standard of how you do business, and nothing that would stand in the way of that, whether it's an environmental law or a right to organize as a union worker, can stand in the way of that. The Board of Supervisors has voted to try to participate in the PUC process in San Francisco to seek to take a position that this company shouldn't be allowed to do this acquisition. The privatization of water is an interesting issue. It's really snuck up on the world, and you'll find that many, many water systems in the United States now are privately owned. Big municipal water companies, parts of the city of New York, parts of the city of San Francisco, Lexington, Kentucky. There's been claims made to parts of the Oglala Aquifer, which is underneath most of the Midwestern United States, that it's now privately owned by big water companies. They own lakes in Canada, and interestingly, most of the interesting work in fighting this battle is coming out of Canada because Canada has all the water resources. There's only 2.7% of the water on Earth is fresh water, and 20% of that is in Canada, but most of it's locked up in glaciers and permafrost and underground. But the real battles are being fought there, and it's important that we all be aware of what's going on, I think, because we'll be next. California's quite different in the fact that we're a water user state, not a water provider state. But some of the issues you can see that we face here in a small way are being faced up in Canada. One of the interesting bits of information we got early on was that Arrowhead Water, which is a division of Perrier or something like that, these companies, that they're all French, it seems like, Vivendi and Perrier and several others, Suez, and this German company. But what's going to happen is that our water use in the world has been doubling every 20 years, which is twice as fast as the population is growing. And there are projections that by the year 2025, the growth in the use of water will have increased 56% beyond the realization of new water resources and assets that can be used. So what's happening is that private corporations see domination of the world water markets as an enormous opportunity. And there's a thought that water will become as valuable in this next century as oil was in the last century. Only 5% of the world's water is now privately owned, so there's this mass drive to get more and more water under private ownership. Where NAFTA comes into this is that NAFTA has these rules that Lisa talked about in Chapter 11 that create new rules of conduct and new rules of proceeding for making claims against governments that try to protect their resources and try to, for instance, have sustainable treatment of and delivery of water and other natural resources. Chapter 11 is all focused on doing things just in a commercially reasonable fashion. And things that governments do that try to stand in the way of that, whether they be environmental rules, rules about organizing workers, all fall under the provisions of Chapter 11. If you're a foreign investor that is investing in this government's marketplace and can make a claim that you've been somehow discriminated against or that your right to take profits have been expropriated by the effect of a government rule. Lisa mentioned the Methanex case, which involved a Canadian company that makes methanol that was suing, wanted to sue the state of California. And actually, that's the one bit of good news. There was a decision a couple of weeks ago where the NAFTA tribunal decided against Methanex, but on a procedural basis that they had to prove that there was an actual intent to actually discriminate against them as a plaintiff, if you will. And the state of California's policies were more general. But there's other cases. There was about the same time there was a case down in Mexico, the Metalclad case, which was before a NAFTA tribunal. Metalclad is a waste treatment company that wanted to build a treatment facility in an area of Mexico near people's residences. And the local government had created basically a sort of a sanctuary zone to try to protect a particular kind of cactus and said that they couldn't do this business in that area. And under our law, under our constitutional law, we have a very strong constitutional provision that prevents governments from taking your property. And if the government takes your property, it's called a taking, and they have to basically buy your property from you. Under NAFTA, what the Metalclad company did didn't amount to a taking under our law. But under NAFTA, it was deemed to be a sufficient expropriation of this company's right to a profit that the Mexican government is obligated to this company for $16 million. Right now, there's a claim being pursued by Sunbelt, which is a California company, against the province of British Columbia for $10.5 billion. The province of British Columbia adopted a law to prevent the bulk export of its water to anywhere else. It permits, you know, bottling of water and delivery of water through commercial water systems, but you can't take the water in British Columbia and put it on a boat and ship it to somewhere else in the world and sell it. And Sunbelt is a California company, actually, that's claiming that this rule operates to expropriate its right to make a profit, and that case is still pending before a NAFTA tribunal. These cases are going to continue on. This, to me, the case in Felton isn't nearly of the moment as the very human situations that are described by the two women who talked to us tonight. But it's an opportunity for people in Santa Cruz to really come to grips with what the implications of NAFTA are for them. And it's interesting because if they hadn't tacked on the rate hike, I don't think anybody would have paid any attention. There's a rule in the PUC that if you are acquiring a public utility asset with the intent of improving it, you're entitled to pay a premium and recover that premium in the rate structure. If you're just buying an existing asset through an acquisition company, which is what's happening here, you're not allowed to do that. So there's four properties, basically, in Citizens, us, which haven't gotten too involved yet, San Diego, City of Thousand Oaks, and Montara. And the City of Thousand Oaks and Montara have made an argument that what is going to happen here is that there will be an attempt to recover this premium that's being paid for this company, which is $2.8 billion, from their ratepayers. And there's a proceeding pending right now where the administrative law judge wants more evidence of that. Curiously, we seem to be the ones who actually are having the rate application made, and there is no justification for it. There's no new assets. There's no new infrastructure in the Felton operations. The costs have gone up by inflation, but inflation in the last 4 or 5 years has been extremely low. So what's going to happen here, I hope, is that people in the Felton area will get motivated, and other people in the area who are interested in the anti-environmental implications of NAFTA and this privatization of water will become involved and talk to the PUC about what a bad idea it would be to allow this German company to do this, and talk to the one possible outcome here is that we'll interest the San Lorenzo Valley Water District in purchasing the assets of Citizens Utility, which would keep it local, and would be the best outcome. They've actually done some preliminary calculations that they could pay a fair price for this company and lower the rates of the people that people are now paying, which would be wonderful. You know, there's arguments made in favor of this privatization that are generally, one is that more capital is better because you can fix things and build things with new capital, and that bigger is better because bigger organizations are more efficient. But the fact is that when they go into particularly poor countries, they invariably raise the rates so that people almost can't pay them. In many places in Mexico and South America where these privatized companies have come in, they pay for water amounts that are 25% of their take-home wages. So you're forced, I mean, we talk here in Santa Cruz about the high rents and choosing between rents and food, but down there they're talking between water and food. That's really bad. There's also interesting movements going on to talk about treating the availability of water as a human right. The World Bank takes the position that water is a human need, not a human right. But the fact is that with something that's becoming this diminished on a worldwide scale, it's going to be important to develop a philosophy and an ethic about what we do with water. Personally, you know, for my own interest, we've worked hard the last 6 years to try to make our end of the county as water independent as possible. The problems in the south part of the county are so severe that that'll take decades to do. But up in the Santa Rosa Valley, if the water resource is properly managed, the valley can have its own water for decades to come. But having a company like this back in Germany that couldn't care less about our local water resource is a real threat to everything we've been trying to do, and gets back to the point that Lisa makes. It's a total shock to think that you're managing your resources only to have somebody in Essen, Germany saying, well, no, they're not your resources, they're my resources. What's really weird is for me is that the springs for this are right near my house. The water runs down the hill, and we pump it back up the hill to ourselves, but now we're sending the payments for that to Germany, or will be eventually, if this happens. So I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about this a little bit tonight. I think, as I said, it doesn't have the gravity, perhaps, that the very human impact of NAFTA has on people in South and Central America. It's mostly an opportunity for us to educate ourselves better about what this can mean to all of us in much bigger ways than perhaps we've thought about to date.
For more info or to get involved in the global justice movement, check out www.globalexchange.org. That's www.globalexchange.org. Or call the California Fair Trade Campaign. Their number, area code 510-663-0888. Extension 102. That's the California Fair Trade Campaign. Area code 510-663-0888. Extension 102. And the music you heard on this program was performed by Larry Shaw. For more information or to obtain copies of his music, check out www.solddowntheriver.org. That's solddowntheriver.org. This program was produced by the V-Man at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Check out our website at www.microradio.net/FRSC. Thanks for listening.
People are rising, my people are rising, my people are rising up. They're beating down, jailing gals without igniting the righteous passion to turn the power around. The Constitution guarantees freedom of assembly, the freedom of speech. We demand it on the streets. My people are rising, my people are rising, my people are rising. My people are rising, my people are rising up. Seattle, Davos, D.C., L.A., Travis, Paris, Quebec City. My people are rising up. From California to the New York Avenue, across the mountains, seas, and oceans. Cities, farms, factories.